This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
What is up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Look us up on our daily podcast, Good Morning Liberty, on your favorite podcast app, or listen to this entire three-hour episode on the Free Talk Live podcast channel. This hour, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction and has implemented really cool features to ensure it's undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their chain locks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering the Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available in exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. And a big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash, Dash.org. I'm feeling good because I like football, and football went well for me this weekend. If you like football, then I guess maybe you had a good weekend too. Of course not if you're an Eagles fan. I'm a Cowboys fan, and that was a fun game. Okay. It's just me. Charlie is still in the Bahamas. I did finally talk to him last night for the first time, and I found out that he's coming back on Wednesday. He won't be here for the show on Wednesday, I'm sure, because he's traveling that day. But he'll be here for the show on Thursday and then for Dumb Bleep on Friday. The live group is voting for Dumb Bleep of the Year. I'm not with them either because I just did some kind of random update and now my settings aren't working to connect to the live group. Anyway, that's not for you guys to worry about. Make sure you follow the show, subscribe, do all those things. If this is your first time listening, just know there's normally two of us, and right now there is only one, so you're not going to get any of that witty banter back and forth, and I'm not even hanging out with the Fed Haters Club right now, so it's literally just me. It was a very interesting weekend, all football aside. The main thing I wanted to talk about today is free speech. A big thing happened over the weekend that honestly I did not think was ever going to happen. Even after Alex Jones's conversation with Tucker Carlson that came out last week, you could kind of tell that maybe Tucker was trying to bring him back into the mainstream a little bit. I still thought to myself, well, there's no way Elon Musk is going to let Alex Jones back on X. Free speech, absolutist or not, he already said he's not going to. He's already going through all this stuff with the advertisers and all of the claims of anti-Semitism, all that. So there's no way he's going to go one step further and let Alex Jones back on X. But I was wrong. I was very wrong about that. The conspiracy theorist, InfoWars, Alex Jones is back on X, and that should at least be exciting. Of course, all of the left-wing media, they've all got the same talking points. They all call him conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. And honestly, if you're going to call anyone a conspiracy theorist, I do think that that can apply to Alex Jones. It just so happens he's been right about some things. But when you throw a whole bunch of stuff against the wall, some of it's going to stick. That's kind of my two cents on Alex Jones. I've never been a fan. Okay. I can't stand listening to him talk. It's just not my thing. I'm sorry. I know a lot of libertarians love the guy. Seems to be a big Trump supporter as well from what I can tell anyway. Stolen election, all of that. It's just not my thing, but you know what? Free speech. That's a hell of a thing. You know, you got a platform where anyone can speak. I think that you need to be on there. Now, as far as a business decision is concerned, not great, in my opinion. And I will say it's kind of bittersweet for me because I get it. Let everyone on there. Let the chips fall where they may. Free speech is more important than money. I do, however, worry about the long-term plan here. And I worry if Elon Musk knows that X is going to eventually go bankrupt, that someone else is eventually going to take it over, and he's just kind of hit the old F it button and making sure that he sticks to his principles on the way out the door so no one can give him crap for that. I worry just a bit about it because I do think it's going to hurt them getting some of these advertisers back. And I wonder if there's a trade-off there, like you keep him off of there and you're still able to make some money on the platform. I get it. That's not principled. It's not principled at all. I understand. But this did kind of make me worry about, okay, so we have a free speech platform for a little bit, but does this mean it's going to go away sooner than later? I don't know. The Washington Post says Elon Musk restores account of conspiracy theorist Alex Jones on X. There was a big Twitter which makes me want to say SpaceX, that had a bunch of big people in there. It had Tate in there. It had Alex Jones. It had Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, taking bathroom breaks with his mic on, all kinds of cool stuff like that. The thing went on for a couple hours. At the time that I popped in there, there were 100,000 people listening in the thing. And so clearly a lot of people interested about this. We'll see how it goes. Now, a lot of people are very upset about this. Of course, he did this after doing one of his polls, one of his Vox Populi, Vox Day, asking if he should reinstate Alex Jones on the platform. 70% of the nearly 2 million votes said yes. So about 30% of them said no. I don't like it when he does these votes. He kind of takes the decision out of his hands, although he knows what the people are going to vote, what they're going to say. But he's able to say, well, the people voted. I'm just putting this up to a Democratic vote, and this is what the people on the platform want. To me, that removes the principled part of it, because what if they voted no? Then are you still a free speech absolutist? I don't know. I just don't like how that kind of removes the responsibility from him making the decision when he posts this stuff out. One of the critiques of this, Fred Gutenberg, who I believe one of his children died in the Parkland shooting. And of course, Alex Jones, known for being a Sandy Hook denier. That's why he owes people like $1 billion that they're never going to get paid. Musk had posted out, I vehemently disagree with what he said about Sandy Hook, but are we a platform that believes in freedom of speech or are we not? Apparently that comes down to how the people voted, not what you believe, Elon. That is what it comes down to in the end. If the people vote him back on, this will be bad for X financially, but principles matter more than money. Well, there weren't any principles. You put it up to a vote. What if they would have voted in a different way? So, once again, kind of annoying talking about principles there. Fred Gutenberg responds, says, no, Elon Musk. He did more than just say things. He defamed people, which the courts have decided. There's judgments against him. The legal system is working that out. And he incited violence and harassment against him. I don't like the idea of incitement. You can say things. It's still up to people whether or not they do anything after you say things. He has a $1.5 billion judgment against him. You are free. You could still be on X and have judgments against you, by the way. You are free to say stupid blank, as you often do, but lying about your motives only reinforces how pathetic you are. I mean, what else do you think his motives are in this case? He knows this is going to cost him money. They're already having a hard time with advertisers. This is going to make that much worse, for sure. So what are you saying his motives are, Fred? I'm not sure. And I'm sure neither is Elon Musk. So listen, it's a big weekend for free speech. We're going to talk about the universities. You know, they had that congressional hearing that went kind of poorly for some of the heads of the major universities. There's also COP28 going on right now. We're going to talk about something Al Gore said. Overall, it's a win for free speech. What a time to be alive right now, where a guy who's sometimes the richest person in the world buys a platform and restores mostly free speech to millions of people after the government had worked so hard to take control of those platforms and take it away. You know, it's a pretty cool time to be alive. And if you're worried about what Alex Jones is going to say, I mean, what better platform for him to be speaking on than X? Because X has a great thing called Community Notes. And this is something that I think the critics aren't realizing yet, is that if Jones goes out there and posts some kind of crazy stuff that has no backing behind it whatsoever, or making claims about people or making claims about historical events or whatever, Community Notes has been hard at it right now. They're going to have to open up a whole nother floor for Alex Jones and the people over at InfoWars. But they're going to end up having things that Jones posts out that's got a big community note under it. And instead of pushing all of his comments down into the basement, onto the black market, where his followers just see him as more and more right all the time. And of course, the fact that he was censored back in 2018, that means he was right about everything. And they don't want you to hear the things that he has to say. They are trying to keep him silenced, whoever they are. Now he's going to say things right out there in the open in front of millions of people who weren't hearing him before. And you might have the opportunity for him to get fact checked every now and then. Whereas before, I doubt he was getting fact checked that often, just on his own little private show on his private website. You know, so this is much better, in my opinion. You can have people responding to the things that he's saying, and the truth can win out. You know, why not have that? That sounds much better to me. So moving on from that, listen, I'm not a big Alex Jones fan. I of course, he's got the right to say whatever he wants. I've been down with some of the, in fact, when the Sandy Hook thing first happened, there for a minute, I saw some of his videos about the shooting, and I was like, huh, that is weird. That guy was laughing until he went up to the microphone, and then he looked like he was crying all of a sudden, And that person does look like they could be an actor, or we didn't really see any shots of the kids or whatever at the school. Like, and I was free to question all that stuff, just like everyone else is. But eventually, the truth wins out, and it's much harder for it to win out if you just push it down there in the back alleyway, and you have back alley misinformation. You know, you're always going to get stuff like that. So what about Al Gore? He's talking about people having access to non-mainstream information and talking about that threatening democracy. Of course, it really threatens him because he's known as a guy who makes claims about stuff that had never turned out to be true. And he's made a whole career of saying things that never turned out to be true. And so, of course, he wants just the mainstream media to be running all of the information that goes on out there, because they're not going to fact check him on everything. And so now when he's out there talking, well, you get a community note or you get some alternative opinions out there. That's very dangerous for democracy or Al Gore. I don't know. Let's see what he had to say.
To one based on broadcasting and then moving on to the internet and to social media has disrupted the balances that used to exist that made representative democracy work much better. Because a free self-governing people rely on a shared base of knowledge that serves as a basis for reasoning together.
The shared basis of knowledge, he wants to be cultivated and put together by very specific people in big corporations that are all taking marching orders from the government and not from just the people all putting all of their knowledge out there. He doesn't want that whatsoever. Let's keep going.
Collectively. But if you have social media that is dominated by algorithms that pull people down these rabbit holes that are a bit like pitcher plants, these algorithms, they are the digital equivalent of AR-15s. They ought to be banned. They really ought to be banned. It's an abuse of the public forum. But when people are pulled down these rabbit holes, you know what's at the bottom of the rabbit hole? That's where the echo chamber is. And if you spend too much time in the echo chamber, what's weaponized is another form of AI, not artificial intelligence, artificial insanity. I'm serious. I'm serious.
What's the definition of insanity? Like saying, for him, might be saying the same things over and over again and none of it ever coming true? Or would artificial insanity be the people who actually believe the things that he says all the time? He says these algorithms and the way people are getting their information on social media, they're just as dangerous as AR-15s. They need to be banned just like AR-15s do. Well, he's wrong on both of those things. And he's seeing that there is a danger facing him and his power and the power of all the people that he's talking to, the power of the guy interviewing him, the power of all of his friends that are hanging out there at COP28 right now. That's what they're actually worried about. It's the same thing that they worry about when people have AR-15s, because that threatens the government's power at all. That keeps the government's power at bay somewhat. All right. So don't be fooled. Let's go on to this university thing. Now, we didn't really cover the congressional hearing that happened last week. They're talking about anti-Semitism and on these college campuses and whether or not it goes against their rules, whether or not, you know, they can allow people to say maybe genocidal things, maybe from the river to the sea, maybe supporting Hamas or maybe just supporting Palestine or maybe just being against Israel, the government of Israel in general, or maybe they're just straight up anti-Semites. And so they were being asked about this. I believe it was the president of, I think it was UPenn that was let go. And don't be fooled there either. That's because of money. That's because of big donors pulling millions of dollars away from the university. It's not because the university had a come to Jesus moment on anything. It's because they're worried about money. There was this really interesting opinion piece in the, let me see, Washington Post called "To Fight Anti-Semitism on Campuses, We Must Restrict Free Speech." To fight anti-Semitism on campuses, we must restrict speech. And this is from Claire Finkelstein. Finkelstein, who works for Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania, I believe. The testimony of three university presidents before a House committee last week provoked outrage after they suggested that calls on their campuses for Jewish genocide might not have violated their school's free speech policies. One of them, Liz McGill, was forced to step down on Saturday as the president of the University of Pennsylvania, where I am a faculty member. But their statement shouldn't have come as a surprise. Congress could have assembled 24 university presidents and likely have received the same answer from each of them. This is because the value of free speech has been elevated to a near sacred level on university campuses. Let me read that again for you. This is because people should not have been surprised by their answers, because the value of free speech has been elevated to a near sacred level on university campuses. And if you've gone to a university or you've paid attention to what's been happening at the universities over the last few years, you're probably laughing right now like I was when I first read this. As a result, universities have had to tolerate hate speech, even hate speech calling for violence against ethnic or religious minorities. With the dramatic rise in anti-Semitism, we are discovering that this is a mistake. Anti-Semitism and other forms of hate cannot be fought on university campuses without restricting poisonous speech that targets Jews and other minorities. Countering speech with more speech, which is what we would say needs to happen, may just mean adding to the hateful rhetoric on campus and would not solve the problem. And university presidents can set up all the task forces, study groups, and educational modules they like, but what kind of educational effort could possibly bring warring groups together that are busy calling for one another's violent demise? Well, what are you going to do when you just don't allow people to speak? They're going to go underground. Their ideas are not going to be challenged. They're just going to assume that they're right, and they're going to just assume that you're part of it, that you're part of this big structure. They're not going to learn that they're wrong. They're not going to learn any lesson. They're not going to hear from other people, because you're just going to ban people speaking to each other. kind of like what happened with Alex Jones and all the things that he says. While open expression and academic freedom are critically important values in higher education, there are other values that universities must promote as well. For example, encouraging civil dialogue across differences. How are you going to do that when you're going to ban some speech that people are saying? Cultivating critical listening skills. What are they going to listen to when people can't talk? Developing the skills to build community relationships, promoting the ability to engage in moral reflection. Why would you need to reflect when you're never wrong? And building resilience in the face of challenge. What challenges will you face when no one can challenge you? These normative skills cannot be taught. By the way, some of that was not what she was writing. That was my response to some of the stuff that she wrote. These skills cannot be taught effectively in an environment where students and faculty are hurling calls at one another for the elimination of ethnic, religious, or racial subgroups. Universities must also consider their obligations to broader society as they prepare young people to assume responsibilities in public life. What values do university presidents think are most important to prepare leaders in a democracy? Well, certainly not allowing people to say what they want. The ability to shout intemperate slogans or the ability to engage in reasoned dialogue with people who have moral and political differences. Is it any surprise that students educated in an environment of anti-Semitism would behave as anti-Semites in their adult lives? I just want people to be challenged. I want them to be told that they're wrong. Now, of course, some of these protests, and especially where people are being intimidated, where they literally don't feel safe, not like you don't feel welcome. I mean, like you don't feel safe to walk on campus, or you're getting shouted at every time you go from building to building, or your travel is being impeded by people. Those things should definitely be tackled. And also, another sidebar here, if it's a private university, I think they can make whatever rules they want. I don't think the government needs to get involved in this. With a private university, we just need to be aware of the kind of values that they're upholding at those universities. Like all skills, students will become experts at that which they practice most. Privileging free speech on campus relative to other values emphasizes skills that pose the greatest challenge to our democracy and fails to cultivate the skills democratic societies most need. All right, coming right up, we're going to go through the rest of this article and some of the ridiculousness that you can hear so far in this article as it pertains to free speech on college campuses. Do we really have too much free speech on college campuses right now? Is that what we have a problem with? I don't know. Look us up on your favorite podcast app. By the way, it's Good Morning Liberty. Go to our website, goodmorningliberty.us. Go to joingmail.com to join the Fed Haters Club. More to come on Liberty at Night.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
USA News Update. President Biden is urging Congress to approve his Ukraine funding request before the holiday recess.
Congress needs to pass a supplemental funding to Ukraine before they break the holiday recess, before they give Putin the greatest Christmas gift they could possibly give him.
He made this appeal in the Oval Office while alongside Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky. This call for urgency coincides with the likelihood that lawmakers will conclude the last week of the legislative year without reaching an agreement. For many, the holiday season is the happiest time of the year. However, the hectic schedules can impact our mental health. Mental health expert Bradley Dirks from Kansas State University advises being mindful of stress levels during the holidays.
There's external expectations of the family. We've always done this in the family, and therefore it's your job now to maintain this. And there's expectations we place on ourselves.
Dave Collins, USA News.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCMteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCMteam.com. Enlist in GCMteam.com and save America.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Liberty and Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. Look for us on your favorite podcast app under the name Good Morning Liberty. Over 1,000 episodes on there. We've been going through this opinion piece in the WAPO from a faculty member at the University of Pennsylvania. This is the paragraph I found to be the most egregious because he's talking about how, well, if you privilege free speech, though that will emphasize skills that pose the greatest challenge to democracy. If you allow people, you privilege free speech, that poses the greatest challenge to our democracy and will not cultivate the skills that democratic societies most need. So to build a better democracy, we need to have these people go through an environment where they're not allowed to say the things that might upset other people. And that is how you build the best democracy. That's great. The crisis of anti-Semitism in our universities mirrors the crisis in our democracy. Isn't it time for university presidents to rethink that rule and open expression and academic freedom play in the educational mission of their institutions? Now, responding to this this previous line that I highlighted here, which you could watch, you could see that I highlighted this line if you go watch this on YouTube or Rumble or Odyssey or whatever. This is because the value of free speech has been elevated to a near sacred level on university campuses. And this is someone who comes from the University of Pennsylvania. So I was like, okay, how is free speech going on college campuses? Well, I went to FIRE, their website, and 2024 college free speech rankings. Isn't this great? What's the state of free speech on America's college campuses? They've got the best and worst colleges for free speech right here. The five best and the five worst. The five best are Michigan Technological University, Auburn University, University of New Hampshire, Oregon State University, and Florida State University for the top five. The bottom five are Harvard University. That's the worst one. University of South Carolina, University of Pennsylvania, Georgetown University, and Fordham University. Those are the bottom five. But, of course, coming from someone who is on the faculty at the University of Pennsylvania, the problem here is that we've elevated free speech to a sacred level, and there's nothing these colleges can do because they just let people do whatever they want on these campuses. Deplatforming attempts at these bottom five schools. Harvard has tried to deplatform nine people. They were 78% successful at that. University of South Carolina has tried to deplatform four people. They were 100% successful. University of Pennsylvania has tried to deplatform six people. They were 100% successful at that. Georgetown tried 10. They were 60% successful. Fordham University tried three, and they were 100% successful. So, of course, they have elevated free speech to just a massive sacred level here. On this survey, how comfortable would you feel doing the following on your campus? They say very uncomfortable, somewhat uncomfortable, somewhat comfortable, very comfortable. Publicly disagreeing with a professor about a controversial political topic. The uncomfortable side is about 70%. Expressing disagreement with one of your professors about a controversial political topic. The uncomfortable is about 60%. Expressing your views on a controversial political topic during an in-class discussion, over 60% are uncomfortable with that. Expressing your views on a controversial political topic to other students during a discussion in a common campus space, such as the quad, dining hall, or lounge, 55% are uncomfortable with that. Expressing an unpopular political opinion to your fellow students on a social media account tied to your name. About 75% of the respondents were uncomfortable with that. But, of course, they have elevated free speech to a near sacred level on college campuses, and that is the problem that these universities are somehow going to have to tackle. Now, they propose, the Wharton Board of Advisors at UPenn has proposed a resolution to punish any student or faculty member that uses hate speech or celebrates murder or genocide. The proposed resolution is vague and threatens to ban wide swaths of speech. This comes from Jonathan Friedman on X. Let's see. Standards of behavior in this proposed resolution. Students and faculty or employees will not celebrate or advocate for the murder, killing, genocide, or annihilation of any individual classmate or any group or individuals in our community. Okay. Students will not engage in hate speech, whether veiled or explicit, that incites violence. Well, how do you prove that it incites violence, and what do you call hate speech? Students will not use language that threatens the physical safety of community members. Okay, well, threatening physical safety of people. Students who violate the above standards of behavior will be subject to immediate discipline. The hate speech one is concerning for me, and I'll tell you what bothers me about this. This all comes down to people having protests on college campuses, and you could say they're supporting Hamas. There were people out there celebrating what happened on October 7th, which I think is gross. You know, I think that that's really a disgusting thing to do, to celebrate the kinds of things that happened on October 7th. And, of course, they're talking about anti-Semitism. What do they call anti-Semitism? Anyone who is against what Israel does is anti-Semitic. Now, there are people who actually just hate Jews for being Jews. But even people like Nikki Haley has said that they need to change the federal rules and definition to include basically the critique of Israel, that that's anti-Semitic if you're out there critiquing Israel or talking negatively about them. That's really dangerous. Let me tell you why this frustrates me to no end. I put out this thing on X over the weekend, and it said Republicans in 2020, quote, hate speech doesn't exist. In 2021, what is it that they said? Hate speech is free speech. Snowflake, get over it. And in 2022, they're like, oh, my God, George Orwell was right in 1984. This is crazy. And then in 2023, they're like, ban hate speech for anyone who talks bad about Israel. That's 2023. 2024, they're like, vote for us. Because the left wants to take away your free speech. Look at what's going on college campuses. And that's the kind of thing that's really bothering me right now that I mentioned last week, I think on Dumb Bleep of the Week as well. are there actually any principals out there? I know there are some people who are principled. I hear a lot of people talking that are principled, but the mob on any side, when it gets together, the mob has no principles. And right now what we're seeing is what we're seeing are calls to ban hate speech on college campuses after years of talking about how terrible it was that people weren't allowed to speak on college campuses because people on the campus were calling right-wing talking points hate speech. And, of course, there's just no free speech on college campuses. Charlie and I went and saw this documentary. I don't remember who put it together, but it had a lot of the Daily Wire people in it, and it was called No Safe Spaces. It was a good documentary talking about what was going on college campuses. And now it's like they're calling for that. If it's anti-Semitism, if that's the thing that you're worried about, and anti-Semitism could be hating Jews or calling for genocide, or it could just be being against Israel's strategy and the war against Gaza. And it's very troubling to me now that they're going to come together and we're going to have the right and the left come together and say, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, we should ban hate speech. And guess what? The left is going to get their hate speech. They can get banned. The right's going to get their hate speech. They can get banned. And all this talking that we did over the last several years about how there was no speech on college campuses, no free speech on college campuses, everyone's just going to completely forget about that and say, well, at least no one's saying anything bad about the Jews. I mean, I know that you can't go out there and talk about Thomas Jefferson, or you can't spread any libertarian ideals out there, or you can't say any facts as it pertains to police brutality or whatever it is, but at least no one's out there talking bad about the Jews. And so, you know, we just got to take that win. And it actually never was about free speech. It was just about you being allowed to say the things that you wanted to say. And at the end of the day, the right and the left are going to come together to hold back speech because it was never about the principle. It was just about the things, specific things that they cared about in that moment. And they'll agree on this just like they agree on military spending and welfare spending when it comes to Congress. You know, the right will vote for more welfare spending as long as they can get the left to vote for more military spending. And all that happens is the government grows bigger and bigger. And that's what happens when people don't actually have any principles. And I'm really worried that that's the point that we're moving towards. Whatever rules we're going to force these colleges to come up with are going to make it harder for people on the right or for libertarians to go out there and talk about the things that we want to talk about, because there will be a certain portion of the student body that equates that to hate speech, and we won't be able to do it. And everything that we've said about this over the last few years still applies, even to people that are upset about what people are saying right now about Israel or about the Jews. You don't get anywhere whenever you abandon your principles. But not to leave you on too bad of a note, I guess on free speech wins, we got Alex Jones back on X. I'm just excited for the community notes section of it. All right, folks, if you enjoyed today's short episode, nice Monday show where I wasn't able to even go live today. I don't have any co-host, just spitting facts right now. Then make sure you tell a friend or a family member to follow and subscribe to this podcast, share it, send a text message to someone, say, hey, listen to this podcast. And if you've already done all those things, well, make sure you go leave a rating and review. That's very important for the tyrannical AR-15 algorithms out there that Al Gore was talking about. So you want to do that. And if you've already done that as well, then you need to go to GodHatesFeds.com and get yourself a God Hates Feds t-shirt, or you can get yourself a Don't Tread on Me t-shirt, or whatever other shirts and merch or coffee cups and other random stuff that are on the merch store, GodHatesFeds.com. And go to joingmail.com so you can hang out with myself and Charlie and the Fed Haters Club every single day of the week when we want to. So we're going to get into Dumb Bleep of the Week now because we had a lot of extra content. Let's get into it. Today is everyone's favorite show of the week. That is Dumb Bleep of the Week. That's where the live group, the Fed Haters Club, put in a bunch of submissions. We got stuff from people on Twitter as well. I think I got some of those in there. I don't really pay attention to where the submissions came from when they go into the show. I just open every single link that's been sent to me, and then I whittle the list down. And then I submitted a bunch of things as well. We are getting very close, dangerously close, actually, to Dumb Bleep of the Year. I think Saturday I will release the February recap. Sunday I'll release the March recap. And we'll have to get this monthly voting done so we can get down to the quarterly semifinals, so we can get down to the final four, so we can actually figure out who Dumb Bleep of the Year is going to go to, and so we can send him a trophy. So if you want to get in, you can still get in on the voting for that, and actually you can still get submissions into some of the next Dumb Bleeps that you could end up winning Dumb Bleep of the Year still, and you could get the coveted Dumb Bleep of the Year trophy. It's a big deal. It's kind of like a lifetime achievement award, except for way better. And so you just pay $7 a month at minimum on the in the Fan Haters Club. Join gmail.com so you can hang out with us. All right, let's get into Dumb Bleep of the Week. We've got a lot in here today because I'm by myself, so it's good to have some extra content when you're doing the show by yourself. And number one, a few of these we've already talked about this week. But number one goes to this article that we talked about on Monday from The Atlantic, from Annie Lowry, entitled, not Annie Lowry, I'm saying what the title is, Inflation is Your Fault. If people are so mad about high prices, why do they keep buying so many expensive things? Now, when we talked about this on Monday, I said it wasn't as dumb as it originally sounded. It's not as dumb as the headline because she does actually mention that wages have been going up and that's been creating inflationary pressure. She mentions the printing of money, the COVID lockdowns, things like that, and talks about that being a major driver of inflation. But then she also talks about people's spending habits and people spending way too much money on things. Unfortunately, she goes on to mention a bunch of things that don't really factor into the inflation number that much, like mentioning things that have a 0.1% weight on what the inflation number is. And just kind of leaves out the fact that when you're in a high inflationary environment, you are incentivized to spend your money now because the things that you want to buy, especially if it's like some kind of big item. On Monday, I mentioned furniture that my wife and I just bought. We wanted to buy that now because it's probably just going to be more expensive later. That's one of the reasons that inflation keeps picking up, because it makes you want to spend your money before things get expensive. And so she does kind of miss the mark on that. And then she also misses the mark on the fact that we all live in the environment that the government created here. It wasn't just a pandemic that forced us into doing these lockdowns. It was a decision by our government to shut down the country, to give people a bunch of money, to print a bunch of money, and to not allow people to be productive in the economy. And of course, that led to a bunch of inflation. And that is why we still have the buying power in the economy that we have right now. That is why things are still moving up. And then, of course, and you can just go back to Monday's episode where we talk about this in detail. A lot of people putting money on credit cards right now. That's where a lot of the buying power is coming from. And those bills, I believe, will come due sometime in the middle of next year. Stuff's going to be looking quite different. So is inflation your fault? Well, did you start this whole cycle? Did you create this situation that we're in? Only in the sense that we elect the people who make these decisions. In that way, you could say it's your fault. But other than that, it's kind of the government's fault. And I'm not even just saying Biden. You know, there was $2 trillion stimulus package while Trump was still in office as well. And we were already running massive deficits at that time. Government taking money out of the productive economy and spending it on BS that we don't need already before this whole thing happened. But of course, Biden came in and threw a bunch of gasoline on fire that had already been started by the previous administration. So inflation is your fault is Dumb Bleep number one. We have 12 today, and so we will move on to Dumb Bleep number two. Number two is Randy Weingarten. Oh, those gall darn teachers unions. They're so great. I love them. She tweets out, worldwide, the extraordinary drop in math and reading scores shows how detrimental the COVID-19 pandemic and its aftermath was to student learning, and highlights just how important it is that we prepare now. My statement, and then she has a statement out here. the COVID-19 pandemic and its aftermath? Or how about the government's response to the pandemic, the teachers' union's responses to the pandemic and wanting to keep the schools closed for way longer than they should have been, which was never, and wanting to continue doing this until, well, we'll talk about that here in a second. She goes on to say, in-person learning is where kids do best, which is why educators and their unions worked hard. Educators and their unions worked hard to reopen U.S. schools for safe in-person learning beginning back in April 2020, and why we've spent the last several years following the pandemic prioritizing public schooling and investing in real solutions for kids. That's a hashtag that helped them recover and thrive. Luckily, there's a community notes on this thing. Here's an article from USNews.com. In July of 2020, Randy threatened strikes if schools returned in person. One from Axios. In August 2020, Randy was pushing to strengthen online learning. And, of course, we had those strikes threatened if they returned to in-person learning. And then there's one from fee.org, one of our favorite places. She only changed her tune when returning in person was inevitable. Like they had to do it. And so she's like, oh, yeah, we have to do this. It's time to do this. That's what happens. So when they say that they were pushing for schools to return to in-person learning, what they mean is they were setting up a bunch of standards that were nearly impossible to obtain and saying, why don't you do this? Well, if you just do this so we could get back to in-person learning. We want unicorns and rainbows at every single school in the entire country. Why don't you give us unicorns and rainbows in every single school? If you would just do this, we would get back to in-person learning. We really want to do this. And so they would set up these $500 billion goals that they would have to hit to turn all of these schools into some type of spaceship for kids to go learn in. And of course, it was unattainable by many schools and for the government, which has no money to do. And all the while, she could say, yeah, we really want to reopen schools. Just do unicorns and rainbows and we'll reopen. That's what we want. If you don't do that, then we're going to go on strike. Here's part of her statement. Worldwide, the extraordinary drop in math and reading scores shows how detrimental the pandemic and its aftermath was to student learning and highlights how important it is that we prepare now so we're not caught off guard during another public health crisis. That means that the schools need more money so they can do more preparation on this. While students in the U.S. are no worse off than students in most other systems around the world, the data reconfirm what we've always known. They've always known this. In-person learning is where kids do best, which is why educators and their unions worked so hard to reopen U.S. schools for safe in-person learning back in April of 2020, and why we've spent the last several years following the pandemic prioritizing public schooling. These scalable, adaptable solutions that are part of the AFTs, that's the American Federation of Teachers campaign, to strengthen public schools align closely with the OECD's principles for equitable and effective COVID-19 recovery. They strive to create safe, welcoming, and well-funded schools with robust, well-rounded curricula that address loneliness, learning loss, and literacy. That's right, the three L's, the four L's, actually, learning loss in there. Our focus is on well-being, wrapping services around schools and making them hubs of their communities, regulating the influence of harmful social media, and expanding opportunities for experimental and hands-on learning that equip kids with skills and knowledge to pursue careers. It's all for the kids, of course. And if you just give them 8 easy payments of $100 billion, they'll be able to do this. The schools are underfunded, folks, as you know. We only spend more money than anyone else on schools, and it's just not enough. It's just not possible. We have to hire some more administrators to administrate some of these new funds that we're going to do. So if you give a school $1 million, they're going to hire an administrator at $900,000 a year to figure out how to spend $100,000. So that you just can't, you can't listen to these people gaslight the hell out of you. She didn't want the schools to reopen. The teachers didn't want the schools to it was pretty cool to be getting paid to not do anything, wasn't it, folks? If we could only go back to 2020, that would just be amazing. But now she gets to sit here and act like they wanted the schools to reopen the whole time. Just burns me up. Okay, that was number two, Randy Weingarten. Number three, this one's just going to be called gun control. The first one is a post from Chuck Schumer, who says, this week, I will put the assault weapons ban on the Senate floor. Hopefully that's into a trash can that's on the Senate floor. After I led the passage of the Brady Bill and the assault weapons ban 30 years ago, America saw a decrease in mass shootings and gun deaths. We must stand with the American people and against the gun lobby. So first off, the assault weapons ban did not actually decrease mass shootings, and the numbers were so small to begin with that it's a statistically insignificant change, if there even was one. There was a jump after the assault weapons ban expired, and the massive jump actually happened in handguns, and then eventually picked up into being a lot of them with rifles afterwards. There's a chart here that I made, and I'll put a link to the video. I put out like a 10-minute clip of us talking about this, I don't know, a couple months ago, something like that. Mass shootings by decade from 82 to 2023. In the decade before the assault weapons ban, you had 8 with handguns and 9 with rifles. In the decade of the assault weapons ban, you had 8 with handguns and 8 with rifles. That is a decrease of one mass shooting, which for all of the studies that have studied this have basically said that is a statistically insignificant thing. That's one person that decided not to do something, okay? And then you have a massive jump in the decade afterwards, still 8 with rifles and a big jump with handguns, and rifles are the biggest ones now. We don't know that the assault weapons ban worked the first time, and doing it now would not do anything. Plus, I don't care what you even think about it. I still have the right to defend myself from the government. I'm not out here hunting deer, okay? A couple more gun control posts. Ryan Sheed says no one needs an AR-15. If you can't protect your home and family with handguns and shotguns, you're doing it wrong. Just admit it, Second Amendment advocates. You don't care enough about kids being shot in the face during science class to make concessions on gun laws and owning an AR-15. Now, there's no proof that if you got rid of all the AR-15s that the shootings would stop.
We'll finish this one up and do a lot more on Liberty at Night.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.